The Rock and Roll Coffee Show is brought to you by Writers and Rockers Coffee Company, keeping the music and memories alive with some damn good coffee. Be sure to pick up your Rock and Roll Coffee Show coffee only at writersandrockerscoffee.com. And also brought to you by Retroactive, located at Broadway at the Beach in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, keeping you retro with everything from 70s, 80s, and 90s. ShopRetroactive.com. Coming up next on the Rock and Roll Coffee Show, a conversation with actress Catherine Mary Stewart. I talk with Catherine about her start in the entertainment industry, landing her first role in the musical science fiction cult film The Apple, moving to LA to obtain the role as Kayla Brady on the soap opera Days of Our Lives, her roles in Night of the Comet, Weekend at Bernie's, and The Last Starfighter, as well as an update on the sequel to The Last Starfighter. If you like this conversation, please subscribe to the Rock and Roll Coffee Show YouTube channel and help support the show. If you're listening to the audio version of the show, please join us over on YouTube. Please follow the Rock and Roll Coffee Show on social media at R&R Coffee Show. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Catherine Mary Stewart next on the Rock and Roll Coffee Show. All right, Catherine, so your career, you've had a great career that spanned probably about 40 years or so, right?
It's hard to believe, but yes.
Yes, and that all began in Canada, is that correct? You were born in Canada?
I was born and raised in Canada. I guess my performing, per se, started in Canada because I was very into dance. And I was in a company called Synergy that from Edmonton, Alberta, which is where I was from. And that started for me when I was 16. And that was when I first started performing sort of professionally in our company. And from that experience, I knew that that was what I had to do, was perform. I mean, at the time it was dance, which I just loved. I loved. And then when I was 18, we traveled to like the Middle East and Europe, performing for the UN peacekeeping forces. Wow. Over Christmas one year. It was a whole show, you know, with musicians and singers and dancers. Oh, yeah, it was a big Christmas show. So that was a lot of fun. And then when I graduated from high school, I decided that I wanted to, you know, go further with my dance training. So I ended up in London, England, at a performing arts school called the London Studio Center, which was at that time primarily dance. It's actually, when I went there, I believe it was the very first year that it was open, and it was primarily dance, but they also offered acting classes and singing classes and things like that. It's expanded since then. It's this big, huge to-do in England now. But I went there to train, and it was there in London that I ended up being cast in a movie. So that was an interesting transition for me.
Sure, sure. Now, let me ask you about your dance. What kind of dance was it?
Primarily jazz dance.
Okay.
But there was a lot of ballet in London, which I loved to a certain degree. It kind of hurt my body more. Like my knees weren't built to be a ballet dancer. It's funny because I have this, what would be considered a great ballet dancer's body. I have an incredible point and I have, you know, my extensions are really nice, but my knees didn't like it. So I sort of focused on jazz.
Okay. Okay. So you got a role in acting while you were over there. Now, what role was this?
This was for a movie called The Apple. Which was a futuristic rock musical.
You know,
set in 1994.
Right. So I saw some clips of The Apple. I haven't seen it, but yeah, I saw some clips. And I got to tell you, it was a little out there for what I didn't know what to expect, but I was intrigued. So I need to find this movie and watch it.
You absolutely should find this movie and watch it. And if you have any pot on hand, that would help. So, not that I'm saying you should indulge.
So what yeah. made you take that role?
Well, it just, so it was a rock musical, and it was just so by chance how so many things in life happen, you know. I was on my way to my dance class, and a couple of dancers were like going the opposite direction. So I asked them where they were going. They said, well, they heard about this audition, this dance audition. It was an open call dance audition for this movie. And they thought, well, we may as well, you know, see what that's like. And I thought, yeah, I should try that too. Because I never really had to audition as a dancer. And so this was something that I really wanted to experience. So it was an open audition. There had to be 200 people there, this massive group. We were all sort of broken down into smaller groups learning this choreography. And the director and producer were watching, and they saw me, and they kind of pulled me out of the crowd and asked me if I could act. And, you know, through high school and junior high, and also then there was this school that I was going to in London, I took acting classes in all of these. And so, of course, I said yes. I'm not going to say no, even right. if I hadn't right. taken acting class. I said, yeah.
Sure, I did.
And so they had me read for this role. And they asked if I could sing. And I said, sure. And so I sang a little bit. And then, you know, it happened all very quickly. I think like within a week or maybe two, I was cast in the lead role.
Wow.
And I thought, okay. I mean, I was also, I had nothing at stake. You know, I mean, it wasn't like some big, I wasn't sacrificing anything. I didn't really have any preconceived ideas of what it was all going to be about. I mean, I knew that I loved dance and I'll try this. I was young and I'll see what happens. And if nothing happens, I just assumed I would go back to my dance anyway. Which really kind of served me, not having any expectation, but it was so much fun. And I just kind of was like a sponge, you know, on the set. And what really kind of helped me a lot was kind of the discipline of dance. You know, you just don't take anything for granted. You work your butt off. That also worked for me, that I had this sense of discipline and a very strong work ethic. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then how soon after that did you go back to LA? Because you went to LA to pursue acting, correct?
I did. So I had never been to LA at that point. And this movie, they opened at the Montreal Film Festival. So I went to that, and there was a big to-do. That was my first sort of foray into publicity and all that stuff. And I also got an agent in London because of the movie. So, I ended up going back to London first, and I ended up doing, Nighthawks, Sylvester Stallone's Nighthawks. I had a small role in that, and a commercial or two, but I was also taking dance class at the same time, because I, you know, again, no real high expectations. Right. I was just kind of doing it. And it was just kind of fun, something to try, I guess. But the production company, Canon Films, offered me another role in another film of theirs. That was going to be shot in LA. So I was in Canada for Christmas, and they asked me to come to LA to be in this movie. But what I didn't realize is that I needed a work permit in order to work in LA. So when I'm getting on the plane to go to LA, the guy at immigration, customs and immigration, was like, well, what are you going to be doing in LA? And I'm like, well, I'm going to be in a movie.
And he says,
he's like, uh-huh. And so where are your work permit papers? And I'm like, work permit paper. I don't know. I don't have those. The production company, the producers, they didn't tell me that I would legally need that, but they didn't also expect that I would be stopped or anything, or that I wouldn't have something clever to say. Again, I was really young and naive. I didn't know, you know. And so they didn't let me on the plane. So I call up the director, Menachem, and he was kind of a bear anyway. And he was so mad at me. And I'm like,
at you.
I you know, screwed up that way. So, but that was sort of like my first kind of even thought of going to LA. And they suggested that I do. So I flew down there eventually, and I ended up kind of working for Canon Films, and they sort of paid me under the table. It was like just to get my feet wet there. And when I eventually got a green card, then I started working. So it all worked out, but that was kind of how I got to LA.
And did you land the role as on Days of Our Lives quick once you got there?
Oh, no, not, I wouldn't say quick. It took me about a year or so, okay, really trying to, again, it's so funny because I didn't put a lot, as I said, I didn't put a lot of, you know, importance really into making this the career. And I think that that can be a problem for actors, you know, when they go to LA and God damn it, I'm going to do whatever it takes to be an actor. And they can really fall into some sort of nasty places.
Yeah.
I never had that. So if anything was, in fact, when I first arrived there, I was meeting with agents and managers, and one manager who was a very powerful manager literally said to me, you know, in order to be successful in this town as an actor, you're going to have to sleep with a bunch of people.
He said that.
He literally said that to me. Yeah. And I'm like, huh, well, I guess I'm not going to be an actor. I mean, I literally felt that way. I was like, ew, yuck.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Of course. I mean, I think a lot of people in the past and whatever, and have maybe fallen into that trap a little bit. So I was lucky that way too. I just was doing it. I was working hard. I was getting multiple auditions a day because, you know, they're always looking for a fresh new face for different things. And I really fit into what was very popular in the 80s. And I just loved every second of it. But it was funny. It's funny you say, how long did it take me to get on Days of Our Lives, which was really the first solid job that I had there. It took me so long. And my agents were like, they brought me in one time and said, so, why do you think you're not getting any jobs? I'm like, nah, I don't know. I start taking an acting class and all this other stuff. And you know, just eventually I kind of fell into the rhythm of the place. And got Days of Our Lives was the first big thing that I got. Yeah.
Yeah. How exciting was that for you?
It was exciting, but it was also a huge relief because I had no money. I was like living hand to mouth. My parents were lending me money and stuff like that. And I was just like, wow, this is not good. And I finally got the job. And the first day when I was driving to the studio, my car ran out of gas because I didn't have money for gas. But it ran out of gas right at the main entrance. So I didn't get to park on the lot, but I just walked in. I'm like, left my car in the street for the day. And somebody, I think one of the actors, gave me some money to buy gas because I wasn't, you know, they don't pay you every day. And I remember my first paycheck, I bought this pair of earrings that I'd seen in a store somewhere that I'm not even sure what the stone was, but it's almost like jade, this beautiful, rich sort of blue-green color of earrings, and they were $70. And I thought, now I'm living, as my husband says, living in high cotton.
Yeah.
My husband's from the South.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah. Virginia. Yeah.
So then you were on there for what, about a year or so? Days of Our
Lives? 2 years.
2 years. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then from there, that's when you went and auditioned for Night of the Comet. Is that correct?
It was The Last Starfighter.
The Last Starfighter, right. That was first.
Yes, okay. That was first. And I was kind of auditioning for, I was auditioning while I was on Days of Our Lives, right. Which was great that my agents were, you know, pushing me in different directions. And I auditioned for The Last Starfighter and had a call back with Lance Guest, who I ended up being the lead guy. And I got that while I was still on Days, actually. And so fortunately, the schedules worked out because Days of Our Lives was shot during the day and a lot of my stuff for The Last Starfighter was shot at night. So there was a couple of times when I did Days during the day and Last Starfighter at night, which was could be challenging. But, sure. But you know, I was so fortunate because it was such a kind of smooth transition from Days to this movie. And it was soon after that I left Days and was pursuing just feature films at that time.
So you chose to leave Days of Our Lives?
No, they wrote me out.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember back in the day, I used to watch Days of Our Lives because I would go to the babysitter. Well, I was probably about, I don't know, 8 or 9, somewhere around there. But I would go over to my friend's house when my parents had to go out or whatever. And they would watch Days of Our Lives all the time. So I'm sure I've watched you.
Could be. I mean, it was in like, I don't know how old you are, but it was, I think my years were like 81, 82 or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Probably right around there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the character, they wrote my character off, but they brought the character back and another actor, and the characters had a long life on that show since then.
Yeah. Yeah. So here we are at the Last Starfighter, and that wasn't a huge hit at the box office, was it? I don't remember.
It wasn't a massive hit. Okay. No, I mean, I think, I don't know. I'm not the one to talk to about all this stuff because I really don't know and
you don't know,
whatever. Yeah. But I feel like I've heard that, you know, it sort of was released at a time. In fact, apparently it was July 13th. Somebody said, happy anniversary. I'm like, what for? That's how much I pay attention to all this stuff. I'm really bad at it. But apparently, I mean, releasing a movie in the middle of the summer, it can be challenging because big blockbuster movies are released at that time. So I think that had something to do with it. And, you know, it was just a little film, but it did great when it was released to VHS.
Yes. And it stood the test of time because it's still out there. People still talk about it. You go to conventions for it right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So it's almost as bigger now than it was when it came out almost.
Yeah, I think it had a huge influence on kids that would come home and put, you know, almost as a babysitter or something like that, put in a VHS tape. And it was the kind of content that parents were comfortable with their kids watching. And it was also, you know, so I think it had a huge impact on like preteens and teenagers, you know, young teenagers, because it's such a relatable story. The lead character is just this kid from a trailer park he's going through this huge transition. He's graduated from high school. All he wants to do is go to college and he can't get into the college that he wants to. And it's just a character that these people can relate to. And I think that has an impact and longevity to how they feel about it. Especially if they're watching it over and over again. And I found also that a lot of the kids that watched that movie back in the day when they were kids want so badly for their children to see it too, because it had such an impact on them.
And at the time, those effects were pretty stellar.
They were. Right? I mean, you look at them now and people are like, oh. But they were literally, and I didn't know this at the time either, they were literally creating the programs for the CGI that had never been created before. This was like grassroots CGI. which, you know, and of course, since then, they've built upon this stuff to what it is today, but which threatens all of our careers now, apparently. We started a monster.
Yeah.
But at the time, the last Starfighter, the CGI in the last Starfighter was the most complex, most, you know, whatever the terminology would be, but it had never been done before on that level, which is surprising. And even the technicians who created it wish they'd had more time because they to create more detail and things like that. But they were on a real tight schedule, apparently. They weren't sure if they were just going to use regular special effects, you know, the models and things like that, or this newfangled CGI thing. So they were just, you know, going crazy. Apparently, this group of technical people were sitting in this big room. And at that time also, you know, computers would take up an entire room. Our watches are nowadays are more, you know, have more power than those computers at the time did. But they would be sitting there, like one guy told a story about how they would be sitting there, and every once in a while you'd hear like "Eureka" or something to that effect. They discovered, they figured out something.
Yeah.
That's so neat. It's really cool, isn't it? And I had no idea until like the 25th anniversary screening of The Last Starfighter when they invited all these technical people for a Q&A afterwards. And I'm sitting up there with them all, you know, listening to this. And I'm like, I had no idea. I had zero idea that this was going on. So, it's kind of cool to be a part of something like that.
Yeah. Was that a fun shoot?
It was so much fun.
Was it?
It was so much fun. Lance and I are still really good friends. The director, everybody, they were in, it was almost like this group of young filmmakers created this story just from the heart. And when they shot it, it was just, you just felt like there was so much integrity and kind of love behind it. So it was a really nice shoot.
Mm-hmm. I heard probably a couple years ago came out about a sequel, part two of that.
Right.
Is that still going on?
I haven't heard anything about it recently, but theoretically, the rights went back to the original writer. And so he apparently wrote a sequel and has been shopping it around for a while. Of course, everything's on hold now. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Betch will, and I think Nick Castle, the director, has been involved with a sequel, and I believe that Lance and I would be involved somehow, but we haven't heard anything. I keep my fingers crossed, but it's such a weird business. You have to keep your expectations down and just be patient. And I'm really happy that it is Jonathan Betchwell, who is the original writer, who's involved with the sequel, because I think that will help maintain the integrity of the story and all that other stuff, as opposed to somebody making it some big sci-fi special effects.
Right. Did they reach out to you when they were had this idea?
They sort of kept Lance and I. Yeah. They mentioned it.
Okay.
You know, So we just have to wait and see. I hope so. I think it's such a great story. Yeah. And I think it'd be really great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's hope so.
Yeah, I know. We'll see. Yeah. I'll let you know.
You let me know. We mentioned briefly about the strikes right now.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this?
It's such a drag that, everything in filmmaking has changed so incredibly dramatically. And the union, Actors Union, just hasn't been able to keep up with the technology. And it's an incredible drag that it's all sort of happening so in such a big way right now because it's changed. So I was going to say it's too bad it didn't happen. We couldn't have, you know, sort of negotiated a bit 10 years ago, but it didn't, nothing like this happened 10 years ago. So really it is the beginning of, you know, the streaming and the AI issue. It's all really very new. And I think that we need to get in there and set some precedents so that, because I think actors have been taken advantage of it so much in the past as well, even as far back as when VHS became really popular. We never negotiated a fair deal even then for actors, because it was changing so fast. And producers are always really good at saying, oh, but it's new media and we don't really know what's going to happen with it and blah, so we can't guarantee this and that. I'm in other words, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely necessary to take a stand and set a precedence that we'll fight for our rights. I mean, actors, there's a handful of actors that make billions of dollars in the business. But most of us struggle to make enough money to get covered by medical. Struggle every year. And when we do, it's like a huge celebration. And what it is it's like 25 grand. You have to make 25 grand in a year to get medical coverage. And you would not believe how hard that is to do. It's so hard. So I feel like we really need to put our foot down for sure, as do writers. And it's kind of great that the actors and the writers are striking at the same time, because it puts more pressure on the industry or the producers.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, it's almost the whole entertainment industry as a whole, though, because music's the same way.
Like
people
yes,
sell millions
sure.
of records or downloads, but they're not getting paid anything for those downloads.
Not getting paid anything. I understand that musicians, the only way they can make money now is to tour.
Mm-hmm. And it's so hard and expensive.
I can't even imagine. Exhausting too, I would think.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really tough.
Yeah,
it's
really interesting tough. To see what happens in the next few months or year or so.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, even then it's still changing so dramatically that even by the time we reach a deal with the producers, it'll probably be obsolete again, you know? So, but you have to take a stand, because they will obviously take advantage if they can, you know?
Sure.
And it's not like they're going hungry.
Right.
So
let's go back onto your career. So you did Last Starfighter, mm-hmm. and then went into Night of the Comet, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Now that's a whole different genre of film. So what, mm-hmm. what attracted you to that role?
Well, partly because it was a total different genre.
Okay.
I love the character of Reggie, which, you know, up to that point, I was kind of considered, in terms of casting, like the girl next door kind of a girl. You know, I'm very sort of all American kind of girl next door-y looking. And this gave me a chance to really express a different side of myself. And in fact, it's closer to who I really am. I think, for sure.
Okay.
I grew up with a couple of brothers. I'm not a girly girl, you know, I've always kind of been a scrapper. and some of those scenes in the movie where it got a little bit physical, I just loved every second of that, because it's such an adrenaline rush. And I also, you know, just with the background of dance, I was very flexible and I was strong, and I loved the character of Reg. Yeah, it was definitely, just different from everything I played before. So that was good. And it's funny how you look back on something like that, because at the time you kind of go into these things, you just want to get a job and want to be cast and stuff like that. But looking back in retrospect in some of these projects, I'm just again, really grateful to have been a part of this kind of unusual film, because I think it kind of crossed a lot of genres, from kind of comedy to horror to sci-fi to, you know, the classic sort of Valley Girl film of the day. And that was totally Tom Everhart's intention. You know, he wanted to make this fantastical sort of weird end of the world movie that in a way that had never been done before.
Yeah.
And I think he succeeded.
I do too. I was just watching that because that one I could watch. I was watching that one. Yeah. I saw it, of course, back in the day, but I wanted to catch up on it. And I still love it. It's still a great film.
I know. It's a lot of fun, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. It was, again, much lower budget even than The Last Starfighter. And there's so many things about that movie. Again, I look back on in retrospect, and it sort of blows me away. I mean, the scenes in downtown LA where we shot, and it was completely abandoned in those days because nobody really lived in downtown LA. It was all banks and, you know, office, hotels mostly. It was like businessmen or women would fly in for business meetings in downtown LA, but there was nobody living down there. And today, you know, it's hugely popular. So we would never have been able to shoot any of that stuff today.
I was going to ask you how you cleared the streets.
As you know, Night of the Comet is a Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. Some Christmas people, time. That's always up for debate, you know, but it was at Christmas. And we shot those scenes like the day before Christmas or Christmas morning or something like that.
Okay.
So it was even less abandoned than normal.
Yeah.
There was just nothing going on down there. So yeah, it worked out.
That's awesome. Now it's coming out in September on 4K Blu-ray, right?
Right. Oh yeah.
With a bunch of extra stuff.
Apparently so. Yeah. We've been asked, Kelly Maroney, who played Sam, and I have been asked to, do a little extra thing talking about our experience on the movie. I'm not sure exactly all the stuff that is going to be on that, but, they've invited us to do something like that. So that'll probably happen.
Yeah.
Which is fun. Yeah. So they keep releasing these movies.
Yeah. Well, that's another one that is kind of like a cult classic that you were in, you know, it's almost bigger now than it was when it came out.
Absolutely. For sure. I mean, it didn't stay in the theaters very long. And again, people suggest that it's because, the timing was off or whatever, but it found a huge audience on VHS. And Night of the Comet, same at conventions and things, people will come up and say, I can't tell you what an impact that movie had on me. It's very gratifying. You know, it's just like, I feel so thankful, grateful to have been a part of it.
It's such
a positive, upbeat thing and has a positive influence on people.
Yeah. Does that just blow you away when you go to these conventions and hear things like that? And you would have never thought that when you were making the movie that this is how it was going to be.
No. I mean, you don't really think, and I think some people do. Some actors might think, this is going to make me a star or something like that. I was never one of those kind of people. I was just like, that was great. Moving on, you know?
Yeah.
Really not thinking in terms of impact, especially however many years later it is. But especially when I first started doing the conventions, it was like, this is crazy because, you know, I just moved on with my life or I still was working as an actor, but to sort of have this kind of acknowledgement up front and center was really crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The conventions seem like they'd be fun. Are they fun?
They are fun.
Yeah.
They're super fun. They can be really exhausting because they're long days and you want to give each person that comes up to you your time and energy. And so, it can be, at the end of the day, it's like, I need to crash now. But it's so, it really is. They are so much fun. We're always treated so well, like gold. And the fans that come to see you are just so happy to see you. So it's a very upbeat, positive thing.
Have you done any other roles similar to Reggie?
Oh, let me think. That's a good question. Me too. I mean, I try to bring a little bit of strength and independence, I think, into the characters that I play. I don't know that I've played another, I was going to say gun wielding teenager that was really good with the Mac-10. Yeah. I've had a few roles where I had to be kind of tough and do some stunts and things, well, mini stunts. I mean, obviously they use a stunt person for all the hard stuff. No, I'm not going to do real stuff. I think my body would just go, I'm sorry. You know, just die. Yeah. I've done some things where she's tough and, physical and things like that, which is always really fun.
Would you take on that kind of role now in your career?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It'd be fun, right?
Yeah. It'd be great.
Yeah.
It'd be great. I don't think I could do quite the stuff that I did back then, but no, I would love to, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so after that is when you got Weekend at Bernie's, right?
Yeah. I went,
direction again.
Right. Another completely different direction, which was, again, something that attracted me to it. I mean, there was several years and several projects in between all that. And I really feel like I've been lucky in that a lot, my characters that I've been cast for have been different. You know, a lot of actors can tend to fall into a niche and be comfortable in that niche or whatever. And I have always really tried to do lots of different kinds of roles. And the thing about, I mean, I'd have to say Gwen in Weekend at Bernie's is sort of the nice girl next door kind of a character. But what was attractive to me to that role, that movie, was that it was a comedy. And I hadn't really done a comedy before. So that was something, and also Ted Kotcheff, the director, and then, you know, Jonathan Silverman and Andrew McCarthy.
On a film like that, is there a lot of laughs when you're shooting? Are you, because Carrie and Bernie, you know, he's dead. So, I mean, he can't do anything, right? He just.
Right. Oh, my God. Yes. The short answer is yes. Because Terry Kaiser, as Bernie, was so hilarious. And I've said this before, to draw completely 100% draw the audience's attention to you as an actor and you're dead, you must be a very good actor.
Right.
And he had that character down. I mean, he'd figured out just such an interesting sort of look on his face and his body movements and everything, which was, in a sense, it's almost harder than being an alive actor, because you're sort of distracted with your voice and, you know, your emotions as a live person. And when you're dead and you're not really supposed to move, to keep that interesting is fascinating to me. And he did it 100%. He's the reason that movie was as popular as it was, for sure. 100%.
Yeah. And then Weekend at Bernie's too, you did not participate in that, correct?
No. I wasn't even asked. I didn't even know they were doing it. So I was like, what does that mean? Yeah. Well, you know, they went with a different character and it was a whole different thing. And yeah. I was fine with it. I mean, I think the first one was probably better anyway.
Yes. Agreed.
Or at least more iconic in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about at this point in your career, what kind of roles do you prefer?
I don't have a preference. I mean, okay. I really, like I said, really like to explore lots of different things. Right now, well, again, everything's sort of on hold, but I was involved with a movie that is more horror, sort of vampire-esque kind of a thing, which sounds really interesting to me. I mean, I've never done anything like that. I have a project of my own that I wrote, and what I would really like to do is get into directing more, which is a cliche thing for an actor to say, but I've done a couple of things and I just love, 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 love directing. So this is a role and a script that I wrote for myself to direct about a mother-daughter relationship, which, you know, I wrote based on experience, but she's a tough nut, this woman, and she has a lot of issues and with herself and with her daughter. So it's another interesting kind of role, you know, it's a little bit different too.
Does this have a title?
And not a permanent title yet. No.
Okay. How about vampire one?
I don't think I'm even allowed to be talking about that stuff right now because something about a dark night or something like that. And the other one is, it has a temporary title, but it's based on, the location is a place where my parents retired. It's kind of a road trip movie, but it also ends up on this island on the west coast of British Columbia called Cortez Island. So the temporary title is Cortez Island, but we'll see what happens.
Okay. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned directing a little bit. When did that pique your interest to direct?
I've sort of been preparing myself for it for a long time. For many years on many projects, if I wasn't working, I would be on the set just taking it all in and just talking to the director of photography and shadowing the director. I've done that for a lot of projects because I just love being on a set and I don't have to be in front of the camera. I'm really fascinated by all the technical stuff that goes on behind the camera. And so when I finally did get a chance to direct, it was so powerful to me, that I knew that was kind of something I really, really wanted to do. So I've been throwing it out there into the universe for a while. And then I created this own project for myself. And I've actually have a couple of other projects too. One is a live stage production. And one is, kind of a reality travel show that I'm sort of developing. And another is a script, the first script that I actually kind of dig writing scripts as well, which just kind of blows me away. But I'm very comfortable just being alone in a room, kind of letting my imagination flow. And so as it turns out, I kind of dig writing scripts. So I did write a script a few years ago. It's not great at the moment. It needs a few more drafts, but it was based on a story that I came up with when I was a little kid. I started writing this story. My family and I were traveling literally around the world, and which is incredible. It's an incredible experience. But as a 12-year-old, you know, sitting in a camper van, driving across New Zealand, isn't the most groovy thing in the world. So yeah. I would get a little bored after a while looking at green hills and sheep. And I started just writing, you know, a story. And I kept it. And it's always been sort of in the back of my mind. So finally, a few years ago, I sat down and I wrote the script.
Wow, that's so
and cool. Yeah, it was a really neat feeling of accomplishment.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's kind of overwhelming, the idea of writing a script, a 110-page script. It's like, how do I even start? And a friend of mine gave me the best piece of advice. He said, just write one page a day. Just give yourself the challenge of writing one page a day. And then in whatever, 100 days or whatever, you'll have a script. Even if you just write one page a day, as opposed to sitting there going, oh, geez, can I do it? Which I'd been doing for years and years. I don't know. How do I start? So I just started. And it kind of snowballs. You know, you sort of get into it. Some days you write five pages. And some days you're not so much into it and you write a half a page. But I ended up writing a script. And I was so proud of myself. It's terrible, but sure. it's foundational, you know, and I can go back now because I have much more experience and understand script writing a little more. I can go back and, you know, dig it back into it, which I intend to do.
That's great. Yeah. That's one of my goals is to write a script. And but I have the same thing. I'm like, I don't even know where to start.
That's exactly. It's the hardest part, but you know what? You just start. And again, if you give yourself, it's not that. It was so like only one page a day. I'm like, yeah, just give yourself that. And that gives you permission to just get started. Even if it's crap, you know, but it's funny how when you start, you become inspired by it. So I would highly recommend that technique, even before you know exactly what it is you're doing, because it doesn't really matter. That will come with time. Mm-hmm. You could sit there and read a billion books about how to write a script, but it's not going to inspire you to start writing a script. That kind of adds to how overwhelming it is in a way, because there's so many ideas of how it is you should write a script to make it work in Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. Just write your story, you know, to start.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about is voice acting, because you participated mm-hmm. in a video game, Red Dead Redemption 2, I think it was.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
How is that compared to acting in a movie?
That was such a bizarre experience, because you're not only using your voice, which of course is going to be in the game, but they, I forget what it's called, it's even called, where you wear the, you know, the bodysuit with all the little balls all over you.
Yeah, you
and then
that.
They have this 3D, you go into this giant warehouse, huge room with the cameras are all around you, so that they're filming you like 3D. And there's a very specific way that you have to move. In fact, you're not allowed to stand still. If you're not talking, you're supposed to still move somehow. So this was one day I had on this thing. You have like just stuff all over you, and it's like James Cameron does with all his movies, with right. his, you know, movie. It's the same thing. They turn everyone's seen, I think, the behind the scenes footage of what it's like to be on the James Cameron movie. It's that.
Wow.
And they turn it. I know. I didn't know what I was getting myself into either. I mean, literally the audition was like, okay, say these lines and then walk around the room. Okay. Run around the room. What does it look like when you run? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just like, okay. And then a couple of months later, they call me up and say, okay, we have a character that we'd like you to play. And I went in, and it was so, I know nothing about this stuff. I sit there on the sort of the periphery of everything. I never really delve too deeply into all the details. So
that could be better that way.
It is for me. Apparently, I didn't know anything about Red Dead. What is it?
Redemption. Yeah.
That's hard to say. Yeah. I didn't know anything about that game, but this was the new one that was coming out, and it was top secret. And we weren't even allowed to like step outside. It was all like, we had to, you know, sign these NDAs. We weren't allowed to talk about it. It was all very, very secretive. And it's like, it was fascinating, but just completely different from anything I'd done before. That's for sure.
That sounds like a great experience though.
It was a great experience. This stuff. It's like, I feel so grateful to be a part of an industry where it's unpredictable. You never know what you're going to be playing next. You get to live vicariously through your characters sometimes. I mean, I remember I did this thing, this movie called Scenes from the Gold Mine, where I got to be a rock and roll singer. And talk about fantasy time. Oh my God. I was like, yes, I get to be a rock and roller. I'd always wanted to do that. And it was so much fun. I met Melissa Etheridge on that, and she and I became friends, and the music was great. Bobby Woods was a producer on it who has done a bunch of junk. And it was, but it was set in the 80s. So when we go out onto the stage to perform, it's like ultra 80s hair and makeup and clothes. So that's, it's fun. Kind of like, oh boy,
ooh, that's fun,
it's
though.
Hard to look at now, but at the time it was a gas. It was a gas.
Wow. Do you have a good voice? I mean, apparently it's pretty good if you sing in some stuff, but what
yeah,
do you think?
Yeah.
Like, would you go out on stage at a concert and sing?
I would love to do that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's, it's again, fantasy time for me. I took a lot of singing lessons in my day. I love singing. I grew up in a house where everybody just sang out loud. You know, friends would come over and we'd be like, I have two older brothers and we'd all be singing, and the music was like, on Sunday mornings, mom would make brunch, which would be pancakes, and we'd always have music going. And that's where I was introduced to rock and roll. It was on Sunday. My dad had, it was kind of going out on a limb. He put the Beatles on, the album Rubber Soul. And oh my God, I was just like, it was like an epiphany. It was like, this is because, you know, normally it would be either classical or folk music or something like that. But then he put the Rubber Soul on, and I found that record and I played that thing over. I knew every song off by heart. I mean, that was my introduction to rock and roll. And of course, I'm a huge Beatles fan ever since.
You got to be careful of that rock and roll music. That's the devil music.
I know it. It was, you know, we were pretty young at the time. This was like, I'm back in the early 60s, I believe. I mean, I don't think my parents were very open-minded, honestly, but I think there was kind of a little something about it, some sort of edge that, I don't know, it was really strange when you look back on it now, you know?
Did you participate in all the hijinks of the 80s rock and roll? You were popular in the 80s. Did you go out all the clubs and do all those things?
I really wasn't much of a clubber, I have to say.
LA and was happening back then.
Yeah, LA was happening, man. I was not one of those actors that was seriously involved with all that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It was just a different set of friends or whatever. Maybe better. Yeah. I just I'm happy, you know, hanging at home and listening to my own music. And
sure.
Of course I went to clubs every once in a while, but honestly, I found them a little overwhelming.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
All right, Catherine. Well, listen, I appreciate you taking time on this beautiful day join me here on the show.
And you, thank you. Where are you located?
I'm in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
I'm in the on the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
You're not far away.
Not that far. I mean, it's kind of like a 5-hour drive or something, I think, to Myrtle Beach, but in South Carolina. But that's cool. Yeah, we're pretty close.
You have a house there?
We do. Okay. We have my husband. I told you he's from Southern Virginia. He's from Newport News, Virginia. And this is where the Outer Banks is where they used to come when he was a kid for summers and go to these little, back in the day, these little beach hotels and stuff like that. They'd bring a camper or something. And so we always had this love for the Outer Banks, and he built this place in like the late 80s. So it's been around for a while, but it's right on the beach. I married into it, which I'm very grateful for. So we raised our kids, like the summers we would spend out here. And now that they are out of the house, we spend a little more time here when we can. And he has an older son whose family now does what we did in the summers with their kids. So they're going to be here in a couple of weeks, actually.
Okay.
And then we'll go back to New York. We have a place in New York as well.
That's your main home, New York?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Are the beaches up there right now, is it crystal clear blue water like it is down here?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It also depends on which way the wind is blowing. We're on the Outer Banks, so there's a sound on the other side. And it seems like when the wind is blowing from the sound, from the west, it makes the ocean very, very calm. But it's a little murkier when it's coming from the east. It really is just, it's warmer, first of all, and just beautiful, crystal clear, beautiful.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. The beaches are great, I'm sure, as they are in Myrtle Beach.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, again, I appreciate it. So thank you so much.
I do too. Thank you. I appreciate it.